Good evening and welcome to the regularly scheduled February 16th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Board of Trustees. The board met previously in closed session. We discussed one student personnel issue, a stipulated expulsion agreement, and I'm wondering if there is a motion on that agreement.
You don't need to announce that here. On the expulsion? You don't need to announce that here. It's just recorded. It's the personnel matter that you need to announce.
Thank you. Well, then moving on to the personnel matter, we reviewed took action on the employment dismissal or discipline of a district employee. During closed session this evening, the board acted to rescind the February 2nd, 2016 dismissal of employee 52-808. The motion was made by Mr. Questenberry and seconded by Mrs. Sheffer and passed by the following vote. It was a unanimous vote. When we conferred with our labor negotiators regarding CSEA, MEC, SAIU, and SLCTA. Okay. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Now we take the action.
I move approval of item 2.01. That would be 4.02. I move approval of the recommended action.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mrs. Sheffer. And this is a roll call vote.
No?
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
So we have six ayes and one abstention by Mr. Millar. Oh, Mr. Millar and Mr. Buckman. Five ayes, two abstentions. And then I'll be passing this around for board members' signatures during the course of the meeting. Okay. Approval of the minutes of February 2nd.
I move approval of the minutes of February 2nd.
Motion by Mr. Questenberry.
Okay.
Second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. And then we have approval of the minutes of February 12th, 2016.
I'll make a motion to approve those minutes.
Motion by Mrs. Sheffer.
I'll second that.
Second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
And I was absent. So we have six ayes and one abstention, I guess. Next, we have a presentation, the Lions Club Student Vision Screening Program.
Something light and fluffy. Okay, you guys deserve it. Doug Bager, I'm an optometrist out in Los Osos. I also have a vision therapy clinic actually in Templeton. And I've had the great privilege of being the coordinator of the Lions Club Vision Screen for the last 30 years in the area. It's a unique program, but we've got a little historical perspective. I'll let you peruse that on your own time. I also like to recognize two people in the audience, recognize from the Lions Club, Walt and Pat Sant from the Morro Bay Club. They sort of represent a lot of different people. And, of course, the whole reason we started this literally 50 years ago is because of a plea from a school nurse. And we're going to – and Judith is very young, but I can remember school nurses way back. So, Judith Geyer, you're super school nurse. So I thought it'd be time. This is one of those little secret things that happens each year. You don't really know what's going on and what happens. And I really want you to understand, because I think it's interesting when people don't understand what's going on, we have the possibility of not sustaining this. And again, I'm not a kid anymore. We want to keep this going for the next 50 years. This happened, believe it or not, it began with some interesting individuals. They received some information at the time from Berkeley School of Optometry that they had finally come up with a scientifically based way of testing for kids' vision on site. And they called it the modified clinical technique, because essentially you take the clinic and do all the diagnostic tools with the doctor on site. And with that, two gentlemen that since passed away, who happened to be the mayor of Rio Grande and the mayor of Pismo, went ahead and started this program. Back in those days, you could never do a school next to you. You'd always have to do something far away, because that would be completely, you know, not professional. And so they made this arrangement so the North County people would come down and the South County people would go up. And so that's the type of, that's how it all started. Let me talk a little about the screen. The screen has still been considered the gold standard, even though there's now new machines and other ways of screening. Because of the doctor being on site, we go ahead and just quickly identify acuity issues, and then we double check. And so this is the advantage of that. You want a screen that's highly specific, and in other words, and not and very, very sensitive. So you don't want to miss any of the kids with the problems. You want to go ahead and not have those other kids that don't have the problems go to get an eye exam, and then the school nurse gets a call and says, by the way, I just paid for this exam, and the doctor said there was no problem. And so that's the type of screen this is designed to be. It's very specific and sensitive, still very good in the hands of a good doctor. So that's what we do. It's the gold standard. This is the problem. It's done by doctors. We don't have a lot of community doctors in other areas. I get calls from Santa Maria each year, please come down. But unfortunately, that whole tradition didn't start down there. We've had a great tradition, and as long as I'm standing, we're going to keep that tradition going, because it's really a great thing. So the new doctors came. I got a new doctor came into my practice. He did like 20 last year. He's bided in the program. That's what we like to do. And so thank you for allowing us to continue this on. So what does that mean? First of all, as far as the actual screen, again, the trailers go from place to place. Your wonderful maintenance people provide that service. And then we give the kids some information, some background information. We have a website so the teachers or the students know, and the parents can find out what happens. And then after that, if the kids need referrals, you know, we were the first in this, really the state that used something called the VSP, Site for Students program. So the kids that don't have insurance can get those services done. A lot of kids now have the, SinCal and others that's covered, so they all have that ability. And if that falls through the cracks, then the Lions Club also comes through and provides glasses and exams for those kids. So this is not a program of just identifying a problem. This is identifying and fixing the problem all the way through. And that is the star of that is your school nurse. And believe me, there's a lot of different results of different nurses. And I've been doing this for years. And so sometimes we go back and we find out all the kids didn't get their glasses last year. Judith, you see those numbers, if you look on the back side, how many we did. Most districts probably have another 100 or so with kids that didn't get their eye exam the year before. Because of Judith and her staff, those kids are taken care of. So I just want you to understand how wonderful this is, because it makes a difference. So what does that mean? You know, it's interesting that, you know, I guess we don't have a strong enough union. But see, people don't, you know, they have to get their teeth checked and stuff like that to go to school. But they don't have to get their eyes checked. It's sort of a unique situation. But there was a very interesting study done by, at the very end here, if you want to look at the bottom of my little sheet there, done by a gentleman at Stanford that is now over in China. He's seen this rollification issue and all these kids going through the school. It wants to make sure that they go into the middle class and progress in the society, and found out that all these kids didn't have glasses. So he did this with a very controlled study. He gave glasses to 8,000 kids. And this is what he found on the education level, that those kids, it was the equivalent of a whole year of education. You can believe that. A whole year's of education. Think about that. 155 kids in your district given a whole year of education just because of this little program that we do that you didn't even know about probably till now. So that's all. Thanks for the extra time. I appreciate it for being out of my board. Any questions that you want to talk about? Comments? Support the Lions Club when you see those little things. Join the Lions Club if you'd like to. Keep your school nurses, please. Beg. Judith, stay around. And things like that. Any questions or comments?
Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Major. How are you?
Hi. Good to see you.
Good to see you. So, Dr. Major and I, Dr. Major's taking care of my eyes for a little bit. The last time I visited, it was like, huh, he was all excited because he and his wife and his son had just gotten back from doing these eye exams. And so, just, yeah. You know, there's a personal testimonial to the yeah. to the work that he's doing, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, I could tell you stories of kids, you know, they thought they were autistic. Just this last year, one that just wandered around, literally didn't know what was going on. They thought this child was special needs. Put some glasses on. I still remember she looked up at a poster at the time and said, Simba. It was she loved the Lions Clinic. Could see that for the first time. There's definitely, you know, obviously there's not the dramatic cases, but it is very, it gets your energy going. It's definitely worth the time. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Just a small postscript. Not only do we do the regular mass school screenings, but then throughout the year when we have kids that have lost or broken their glasses and a teacher has concerns, then the Lions has been there for us when a kid didn't have the resources throughout the year. Then we've been able to refer to get the glasses that they need. So it's kind of ongoing.
Yeah, ongoing.
Yeah, I call Walt up. He holds down the coast and tell him we have a student in our schools on the coast, and he'll approve it, and we'll get him in to be seen.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for your time.
Well, and Dr. Major, I would tell you that I believe everyone on this board has children who went through San Luis Coastal Schools, so we are well aware of your program, and it has touched our own children as well, and we're very appreciative for what you do. It's a tremendous gift that you give our students. Thank you for coming tonight. Okay, student representatives to the board. Bella from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hello. So there's been a lot going on at San Luis Obispo High School for the past couple of weeks. Last Friday, we had our first annual Slow High Film Festival. We had about 18 entries. Each video was about 7 minutes long. They were from a variety of different categories. But our arts commissioner, which is a new position this year, that sort of came about from a student need for more recognition of the arts on our campus. So this was our first ever film festival. Ms. Asendroth Rogers was nice enough to be one of the judges, which was very awesome. We had a judge from KSBY, a couple teacher judges. So it was a really, really great event for all of our students, and we had a little excerpt on KSBY, which was very cool, about the winning film, which won, I believe, $200, second place won $100, and third place won $50. And then the students got to vote on the best actor and best actress, and they came home with Oscar-esque trophies. So it was a very fun event for our school. We also had our big MCP versus Slow High rematch game on Friday. It was very loud, very out of control, and probably one of my favorite memories from high school so far. It was a really great game. So we will be traveling to San Ynez tomorrow. Actually, we're sponsoring to get a couple of vans to bring kids up there so we can, quote-unquote, bring the jungle to San Ynez. All of our winter sports actually have made it to the playoffs, which is absolutely phenomenal. Our girls' soccer is undefeated. The school spirit at Slow High right now is at a level that I've never seen in my 4 years of high school, so it's really, really great time to be on campus. Our Skills USA team has won multiple gold medals in their last competition. On Saturday, ASB hosted a community father-daughter dance that was called the Sweetheart Dance. Basically, we set up a normal high school dance setup with a photo booth, but let in any community member with their father figure and girls to our Valentine's Day dance. We had about 200 people in present and a lot of Slow High staff and their daughters, but also a lot of little girls from the community since we passed out flyers to every elementary school in our district. So it was a very special event. I know my dad showed up with my little sisters, and I got to dance with him a little bit. So it's those kinds of events that I think I'm most proud of our ASB team for reaching out to our community, because that was a very special time for all of us. Also, our bathrooms last week in our main building, there was very big problems with the plumbing. We had porta-potties for about a week and a half. Thank God for Measure D. It's fixed. We're fine. But thankfully, we have very patient staff and students who endured throughout that week. But now we're good. We also had a freshman who was chosen to perform with a women's choir at Carnegie Hall the past week. That was a really big honor for us. She has received a lot of recognition at our school. And also all of the Sohi students from the County Honor Band will be performing tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Performing Arts Center for $10 if anyone would be interested in seeing them perform. So that's what's going on. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions for Bella? Okay, well, seeing none, then as always, you're free to stay, and we're mindful you may have other commitments, so you're also free to go. And thank you for coming. Okay, moving on, we have correspondence. Let's see. At the time the agenda was printed, it was noted that we had received one piece of correspondence from Rose Fowler, a counselor at Del Mar and Monarch Grove Elementary Schools, regarding our study session on student assessment.
Meryl?
Yes.
I received correspondence from Jim Nett as well since the last meeting, or just prior to the last meeting. Did others? I don't know.
I don't think that correspondence probably was not directed to the district itself, and that's why it's not noted here, but I also personally received correspondence from Jim Nett.
Thank you.
From Laguna Middle School regarding our student assessment study session. Moving on, the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's time for public comment. Have we received any written notices to speak? Is there anyone here who would like to address the board during public comment? Okay, seeing no one, then we'll move on to the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, if the board has been reading the Tribune lately, there's been a lot of editorials and things about our state senator, Bill Moning. He's put forth a bill with the state senate to kind of look at the potential closure of Diablo Canyon, what economic impact that would have for our county in particular. And so I know it's something that's been debated, you know, back and forth. This board knows the impact that can have in terms of our local school district and what happened, you know, 16 years ago, I guess, around that time, 15 years ago. So I'm thankful that Senator Moning is putting that forward. I know that we will try to assist him in terms of getting information and knowledge about that and seeing if there, you know, should something like that happen in terms of Diablo Canyon, that we can try to protect ourselves in any way possible. So we'll see how that goes. We'll make sure the board is informed. The other thing is you'll see later on in the agenda the purchase of a school bus. And so Annie Sharp was able to help us receive another grant to pay for one of the buses. We are going to upgrade this bus a little bit and make it a field trip bus, so it can be used for normal home to school routes, but also a little nicer, so that instead of paying those thousands and thousands of dollars for charters, you know, when our athletic teams go or our FFA team or those things go, that they'll want to take this bus as maybe in lieu of spending all those funds. So that's a definitely a positive thing as we continue to help our fleet.
Mr. Pinkerton,
yes.
I noticed that there was cost associated with the bus on the FERS report, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. Are we getting two buses?
Just one.
Just one. So this one was not grant-funded, or was it partially grant-funded?
No, it's grant-funded. Once we purchase it, we receive the grant funds.
So this would be then bus number 5 that
I believe so.
Mrs. Sharp has been able to secure for us through grant funding?
Yes.
Thank you.
That's great.
Mr. Millar.
I just wanted to note to Mr. Pinkerton that the Tribune editorial basically called this proposed study a waste of time because we already know what the consequences are. But what I found myself puzzling about after I read that is, and this may not be the time to discuss it, but it puts us dangerously close to revenue limit if the projected projected change in property taxes occurs.
Yeah, and it's an interesting dynamic because not only do we potentially lose the property tax fund, which is roughly about $10 million that we receive it from PG&E specifically for property taxes, but we also currently receive over $3 million in our kind of ongoing categorical funds, as well as we receive some EPA funds as well, so almost $4 million more. So it's really it could potentially be about a $14 million budgetary hit to us. And so, you know, with the LCFF being funded more, and even this year, should the governor's budget pass up to the 95%, it definitely is going to help us and alleviate that fall, but it's still a pretty dramatic, you know, impact on our budget as a district. And so it's something definitely we appreciate getting ahead of that conversation as much as possible. If there's a way to work with PG&E to alleviate that, I think it would be a definitely something that's a positive thing for us to continue to look into.
And is anybody handicapping the chances of the license being extended or anything like that? Okay.
Yeah, not that I know.
Very interesting.
Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Unger.
And I would just add the indirect hit as a result of the donations that we receive every year through PG&E, through the employee funds and things of that nature, other donated monies we receive.
Well, and I mean, we're talking about the school district, right? And that's part of it. But it's over 3,000 jobs. It's $900 million annually in our community. So it's a big
It will have wide-ranging and deep effects on our community as a whole.
So one of the things that I've wondered about with this is, would there be an immediate steep drop off, or would there be kind of a glide down as the plant would be deactivated? And also remembering that we're going to be hanging on to the spent fuel rods for quite a few years. So that's just something I think will be interesting to find out as we go through the study.
Yeah, and so that really is a key area in terms of how that impact happens. I wasn't here when the board had to deal with this issue in the past, and I think that was a pretty steep hit, right?
10% in 6 months, yeah. I think, wasn't it, Walter?
Right away, and so that's our major concern. And I know that I did read the Tribune editorial about it, and we do know it has a big impact, those types of things. But if there's any way possible that we can, you know more, find out more, I think it's in our best interest as a district to support Senator Monning in trying to get this accomplished.
Well, I'm just curious too, because if the offshore tidal or wind electric generation happens in Morro Bay, will we get money for that, or is it it's offshore?
I have no idea.
Will we not see that, and will we only see the money available through the transmission?
I don't know. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I just received an email today that there's a gentleman by the name of Michael Schellenberger who's speaking this Thursday at the Courtyard Marriott here in San Luis Obispo, and he's talking about Diablo Canyon. And one of the things he's addressing in this is another aspect of this whole conversation is whether or not, in fact, Diablo Canyon may be crucial to California's clean energy and climate change goals. So another perspective on whether or not that may happen or may not happen.
What time is he speaking?
7 p.m.
Thank
on
you.
Thursday.
Thank you. So, then, seeing no further comment, we'll move on to educational services update. Mr. Robinette?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make sure the board's aware that we're halfway into February, which means we're halfway into LCAP outreach season. And so we have been, myself, Mr. Pinkerton, Mrs. Newland, have been going out to school sites and talking about our budget and our plan and soliciting feedback. We've hit 7 of our 10 elementary sites, so have a few more to go before we hit the secondary sites. So that's happening right now, and we have also, this will be the second year that we're reaching out to our secondary students and actually getting groups of students to give us information about what they're seeing in their school district and their education. So last week, Dr. Prater was at Pacific Beach High School getting some feedback. We'll be at Slo High School this Friday and be hitting the other, the two middle schools and Morro Bay High School next week. So to solicit some input, I wanted to make sure the board, I'm sure we've shown this many times, but Mrs. Holmes, if you just put our district website up there, and this is for the public, we keep this as a kind of a running tab. So on the About tab, you go down to where it says LCAP LEA. We have all our plans there, and it's a working document. So this has all of our current LCAP. It has a summary. If you want to just read a quick executive summary of what's going on, our EL master plan, our LEA plan, the presentation that we're actually delivering at sites is down in that bottom half there where it says LCAP presentation. There's a PowerPoint slide presentation if you want to, if anyone wants to see what we're actually talking about at sites. And then we get input from the school sites. Now, we really like to get most of that input through survey so that people can voice their opinions anonymously and not be tied to saying something to us. But we do, where it says LCAP site department meeting input, what we hear from school sites, we publish. And so it's right there. The survey is going out after we speak to every school site. People can take it anytime they want. It's up and running. It's on a SurveyMonkey. But then we will, when we get all those results, obviously be publishing for the board and putting it into our plan. But just know that at any time you want to see kind of where we are in the process, it's there. And
the student data as well.
And the student data will be up there as well. Yeah, thank you. So any questions about LCAP? That's what we're spending a lot of our time on these days. Thank you.
I see none. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Measure D update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so we have actually met twice with our bridging document architects now. For Mr. Holka, Mr. Plaza, myself, very excited with this group with Pratt Architects, and just today met with them. And so what they've been able to get accomplished even thus far, even in a few weeks, has been great. So looking at those tentative plans and getting everything together. And it's a significant portion of both the Morro Bay High School campus, classrooms and facilities, as well as San Luis Obispo High School classrooms and facilities. And so that seems like it's good momentum, good steam for us to be able to accomplish what we need to, which is fantastic. As Bella pointed out earlier, we have some big trees on the San Luis Obispo High School campus. And the reason why they're so big is because their roots are in the sewer system. And so this weekend, they pulled out 40 pounds of root out of the sewer system. And the school was literally, the whole middle section of classrooms was shut down for a week without restrooms. So the entire 100 building, no restrooms for a week. So Rick Stimson and his crew and outside plumbers, it all started with them trying to use a snake, a professional company to come and use a snake. Well, their snake got stuck.
Whoa.
And so that took another weekend, a few more extra days to get the snake out before they could actually go in and take care of the roots and get the system going. So fortunately for us, the system is back on board. There's actually an agenda item later on that we're going to discuss why we need to go ahead and jumpstart an infrastructure project specifically at San Luis Obispo High School for Measure D and kind of get on that sooner than later. So that'll be upcoming. Other than that, we do have some key projects that are getting away this summer. So both the tennis court projects, modernization at both Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School will be underway. We have a beautiful annex building, a new annex building that's being designed, put together for San Luis Obispo High School, 12 new classrooms. And then kind of a key feature at Morro Bay High School that's moving quite along in terms of the design process is the entire J-Wing there, which is their robotics, their CTE classroom, fine arts, ceramics, arts, as well as their automotive shop. So I think it probably at our next board study session, I'll be able to kind of share where we're at, kind of the new designs, new ideas, and bring the board up to date.
Mr. Questenberry.
So on that J-Wing, is that also including the old bus barn out there? Is that
so
part
that,
of that?
That's going to become the new auto shop.
Right.
Okay. Both sides.
So it's all
all part of
both buildings.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now, initially, the auto shop in particular, it'll be more of a just a move for the year right now, probably not doing a ton. But next summer, that'll be a project that will be modernized more. But definitely need to move the lifts, get everything over there so that he can set up shop and utilize that space for next year. And then that allows us to go ahead and go in and begin to gut those J-Wing classrooms and set them up.
I'm looking for
a... Oh, yeah.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. Rick, as I've asked this before, and I just think it's good for the public to hear, so as we're talking about Measure D and its classrooms and it's good improvement for education, there may be a question out there, it's a question that I've asked, is why are we starting with tennis courts? And so there was a very good reason, and if you could repeat that, I would appreciate it.
In terms of...
Well, it was we need to get those things done, so
yeah, there's peripheral kind of jumpstart, easy projects that we can get accomplished, get started, and so that's definitely one, I would say, at both sites. Morro Bay High School, the pool in particular, because of the need there and what's happening at the school site.
It's also my understanding that by phasing it in from outside in, yeah, it made it easier for us to do the
definitely
work inside.
Definitely does.
And so that'll go quicker.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Absolutely.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, the question I'm getting a lot, and you touched on it, is what's the status of the shovels in the ground for the Morro Bay pool? I know that we're waiting for DSA, or we were waiting for DSA, and we're also sort of waiting for permits from
Morro Bay. Yeah. So we have we expect DSA approval for the Morro Bay High School pool any day. I would say this month of February. We're a little held up in the CEQA process, I will tell you, at the city of Morro Bay. So getting, you know, there are some tribal issues there. There were some Native American remains on that campus that were found several years ago. And so there's definitely some processes that we have to do. So they've been in contact with all the tribes, and we'll mitigate and have people there as we move forward. Any types of unearthing, digging, those types of things, they'll take part of it. So I think the latest that they talked about now is getting that on the Planning Commission for April. So there's a potential for us to begin the bid process prior to that, complete, you know, CEQA process. So that's something I'll have to work with Mr. Holcomb and Mr. Palazzo in trying to, if we can, run those a little concurrently so that as soon as we get that process, we can accept a bid.
So the process, the DSA approval. So are you saying you think we can do the bids as soon as we get the DSA approval, or do we need to wait until we get the permits before we can bid the project out?
So we should have the permit before we can actually accept a bid. Mr. Holcomb,
okay.
Correct?
Probably accept the bid. You couldn't give a notice to proceed.
Exactly. So if we can coordinate those as close together as possible,
okay,
I think that would kind of be our goal. So it's a little cart before the horse a little bit, per se, but as long as we can get confirmation from the city of when that Planning Commission is going to be and know that date, then I think we can backwards map from that point.
Okay.
Because I don't think that there's anything that's going to hold. There's no indication after this 30-day waiting period, after March, and by the time we get to that date, there shouldn't be anything else that's going to hold us back.
Okay.
So knowing that, we can try to backwards map, I would say, the bid to that date. So once we get approval, we can have the board accept the bid.
And it's the date of approval from the Planning Commission. Is that, 'cause the reason I'm trying to get the details is I'm asking about this, and I want to
understand
it.
And I get the same.
Okay, and so we probably wouldn't get shovels in the ground till June, maybe, July,
May.
Like that. You think we could really do that in May? That would be great.
Mr. Holcomb?
Yeah, I think there's a legal question to make. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can use mine.
I think there's a legal question that we'd have to get answered about the CEQA process.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
So I think you could probably have a bid, the board approved, subject to the permit being issued and the CEQA requirements met.
Thank you.
But we are doing everything in our power to get shovels in that ground as quickly as possible.
And I appreciate it. I just know that I get asked some specifics sometimes about when we think we're going to actually do it and what the process is.
So we're kind of subject to that timeline right now in terms of getting that CEQA process done. So as quickly as the city can get that accomplished, it definitely helps us in moving ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we'll move on to item 8.1, 9010 Dual Immersion Program update from Pacheco.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Rick Mayfield, principal of Pacheco Elementary School.
Good evening.
And very happy to be here tonight with an amazing group of educators. We have Jason Browning, Mary Iron, and Daria Hernandez, kindergarten teachers. Monica Garcia is our preschool teacher, and Connie Reynoso, our instructional coach. And Jackie Garcia is, or as we affectionately call her, the rookie, is not here tonight, but she's doing a great job in kindergarten as well. She's out sick. We're going to share with you a picture video collage first to start off with, and then each team member will come up and share anecdotally a piece of information about the process to date. Most of the information that you're going to see tonight is anecdotal. Hard data will be coming in shortly. In fact, this week we began testing for the upcoming report card period. And, you know, kindergarten, it takes time. And we didn't feel like there was valuable information that we could share from October testing of kindergarten students 2 years or 2 months after the school year began. But our benchmarks are the same as all the students in the school district. And so we'll be sharing that information with you as it becomes available. Okay? So, Kim, if we can play the video.
To watch and interact with all the kids speaking Spanish, and I was shocked because I don't understand Spanish at all, don't know how to speak it, and I couldn't believe how much the kids understood when they were told to get up from the blue line in Spanish. They got up and went and got their four books that they were told, cuatro, and went and sat down and read, and they knew what to do when they came to my table, and Maestra explained it all to them in Spanish, and they had to tell me because I didn't know what I was doing.
Esta serpiente. una tarjeta y una caja muy especial. Y también necesitas un cartel y un y una niña. También pasa las manos. Primero agarra jabón, luego te lavas las manos.
Saber cómo hacer un balcán. Te vi a enseñar.
Look like Zelda, so it wasn't spilled milk.
It looked like Antarctica, but it wasn't Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. It looked like a ghost, but it wasn't a ghost.
Say it!
It looked like a tree, but it wasn't a tree.
Look down.
Mira como un árbol más que nada.
Okay, let's do it. It looked like a tree, but it wasn't a tree. Okay, Memo, try it. It looked like a tree, but it wasn't a tree.
Ah, está bien padre divertirse con los amigos, ¿verdad?
Yes.
¿Y te gusta que estás aprendiendo inglés y español?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
Porque me gusta el español y inglés, porque me gusta hablar los idiomas.
Zoe, what do you like about the school?
That we get to do on color time, and I love coloring.
Yeah. ¿Y te gusta leer en español en tu clase?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
Yo tengo un libro favorito.
¿Cuál es?
Es de perros.
Y ahorita que entré a tu clase había una canción de Superlector. ¿Te la sabes?
Sí.
¿Cómo va?
Superlector, Superlector, hace todo para leer mejor. Leer palabras grandes o chiquitas y las lee con su dedo. ¡Así! ¡Snap! ¡Cuidado! ¡Aquí viene el super lector!
¡Wow! ¿Y qué más haces aquí?
Puedo aprender cosas nuevas.
¿Cómo qué?
Como que leo un libro para aprender todas las cosas que aprendí.
Espérame, ¿ya sabes leer?
Ya.
¿Cuándo aprendiste?
En mi casa.
¿En tu casa aprendiste?
Sí.
¿Hace mucho tiempo o apenas?
Apenas.
¿Apenas? ¿Y como qué libros lees?
Do you know an English song that you sing in school too?
No.
No? You don't know any English songs that you sing at school?
No.
They
never teach
us. They don't teach you any English?
No.
Wait. I thought you went to Mrs. Garcia to learn English.
I do, but I forget most of the songs because, like, I'm learning more Spanish and it, like, because the English comes out of my mind and that sort of mind.
Oh, is that what happens? The English kind of goes out of your mind and you go into your Spanish mind?
Yeah.
So is it like you have two brains right now?
Yeah. I'm like, okay. I'm going to do this. Oh, yeah, I forgot the song.
Did your family speak again?
English.
English only or both?
English only.
Wow. And are you teaching them a little bit of Spanish at your house?
Yeah.
What do you do? What are you teaching them?
My grandma barely knows any Spanish, so when she comes to pick me up, she asks what things are in Spanish.
Does your mom know any Spanish right
no.
now?
She only knows, like, hola, ¿cómo estás? And she knows some, but not as much as I do.
Mi maestro Brown y mi enseña español y mi maestra Aaron a mí enseña inglés.
¿Y te gusta aprender los dos idiomas?
Sí.
¿Por qué?
Porque mi mamá ya está aprendiendo inglés.
¿Y tú le ayudas a veces a aprender inglés? ¿Cómo le ayudas?
Le digo palabras en inglés y ella me las va diciendo.
Thank you, everybody. It was great to show off our 90-10 kids up there. It was fun to put that video together, too. My name is Connie Reynoso. I'm an instructional coach. And in order to get that, you really need the hard work, dedicated teachers, and we have that. So over the summer, we mapped out our year. And what that meant was butcher paper on two tables, basically, or close to three. And we looked at our Bridges curriculum. We looked at our number corner. We looked at our writing. And then we went into the Next Generation Science Standards and our California History Standards and selected those units and placed them where we felt they would be best placed. Thematic, good teaching, you know. And what we did after that is pick those, like really look deeply at that standard, pick those guiding questions, and then think of all the strategies that would make sense. And I can tell you now that we know each other so well as a team. We know our strengths. We have, who's going to do our chants? You know, the chant that you just saw up there? Rocket Daria, right? Monica Garcia over there, rocking it, chants. Mary Iron, awesome. She's like looking for those read-alouds, those or creating those books, has sharp ideas. Let's create that, because those big books, we create stuff together. And then, she's not here, Jackie has taught us so much about technology. Bringing her youth and teaching me, we now have a YouTube channel thanks to her. And Jason over there, Monica and I, in our previous unit, we said, what's our NGSS heavy hitter? Let's plan that together. And then we share that with the team. And we refine, basically, what we come up with after that. So now, first grade. First grade is lucky because they got to go into kinder and see what's happening in action, which got them more motivated, more excited. And we planned together for our very first unit last Wednesday. So thank you, guys. We're so super excited about that.
So I'm Jason Browning. I'm a kindergarten teacher at Pacheco. And I'm not texting on my phone. These are actually my notes, just so you guys realize that I'm not being disrespectful. So thank you for hearing us. I'm here to talk a little about how our groups are together all the time. I've been fortunate to be involved in bilingual education for a long time, and I think it's really important that programs evolve over time. And for, I think, us at Pacheco, it was just a natural transition, a natural next step to go for the 90-10 program that we did. For me, I think one of the most poignant things about the change has been, aside from the academic benefits, the social benefits of kids being together all the time, not being separated out according to language, just makes a lot of sense. Their friendships develop. They're able to be sharing expertises. Each group comes with a different skill set. And the mentoring that happens between, let's say, a Spanish speaker and English speaker who are sitting together in a reading partnership is just exceptional. Both participants feel incredibly empowered to be able to teach somebody else something and to be a recipient of some help, because I think it makes kids as well as adults feel a little bit more well-rounded and a little bit more a participant in the educational process. It's just been really great. I see these friendships developing inside the classroom, on the playground, and I think sometimes, to be perfectly honest with you, people just don't know who they're playing with. They just see them as that child, as opposed to a Spanish speaker or an English speaker. And I think as a society, that's what we really want. We want people to see people for who they are, not from where they grew up or what language they speak. for me, that's been one of the most exciting things about this program, to see everyone just kind of learn together and being part of a learning community as opposed to having things be separate. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Me da mucho gusto hablar con ustedes. It is with great pleasure to just show and tell. That proof was in the pudding, wasn't it? So I'm here to kind of explain to you language acquisition for both groups of children. And I would have to say language is our name and acquisition is our game. So if you could get some of the glimpse of some of that from that video, it's just a little snippet of what we do all day, every day, and it's really exciting. It's about as exciting as that roller coaster ride that we put up to our eyes there. It's like, whoa, my goodness. But for the English speakers in our program, this is a big change. They used to read and write in their primary language, and then they learned as much Spanish as we could give them, but we just never felt like it was enough. And so what is different for them is that they're reading and writing in Spanish, and it blows me away every day. I can't even tell you how exciting it is to see the acquisition just embedded in everything that they do. So, you know, at the beginning of the year, we were a little bit worried about, like, how are they going to do Lucy Calkins writing? I mean, Lucy Calkins is in English. We have to change it into Spanish. How are we going to get them to be thinking and saying, you know, writing is thinking, reading is thinking, but they're thinking in English, but we have to do it in Spanish? You know, it was kind of one of those big question marks, and we said, let's just do it. And they are showing that it can be done, and it can be done at a very high level. We're very proud of the accomplishments of the students and just watching them become informational writers in another language. Just today I had a student, you know, was writing about how to make pizza. And it was an English speaker, and he was saying, ¿Cómo hacer una pizza? And then he said, primero tienes que hacer el dough. D-O. And it was just so cute, because if they don't know the word, they just sound it out, but they're sounding it out in Spanish, and they just throw in that word because, okay, I haven't learned that yet. But that's okay. We're going to learn it. When we get it, then you'll start writing it. There's no worries, and nobody's uptight, and I don't know how to do this, and I can't do it because I don't speak it. They just do it. So that's the exciting piece there, and the same with reading. They're all readers. They see themselves as readers. You come into the classroom, they're sitting with their book boxes, they're reading partner reading or reading by themselves, and the acquisition of the language comes through the reading. It comes through the writing. And then you wouldn't even believe what they do in math. I can't even tell you. Just come in and watch. That's all I can say. Just come in and watch, because we can't tell you how amazing it is. We can only show you. And then for the Spanish speakers, the language acquisition, what was the piece, what made us do this shift was that they just didn't have enough meat. They just didn't have enough of it to keep going and become stronger. And so, you know, they get, it's a little bit watered down at home because of childcare or too much TV or both parents working. And we just wanted to give them more and more and more so that their language can be strong, and they can, the English will come very strong. And we're already seeing that happen. So, one of the things that Mr. Mayfield shares with the families, the Spanish-speaking families, is that it really hasn't changed that much, but it's just richer and stronger. For me personally, what I see different, and I'm sure the team agrees with me, is that the Spanish speakers have become the leaders. They're the ones that know how to do what the teacher's saying. And they're the ones that lead the rest of the kids. If somebody doesn't get what's going on, they're the ones that jump in and help. And that gives them this empowerment that makes them stronger readers and makes them stronger speakers of English, which is what we're all about. So that's a little snippet on language acquisition. And I'm always bugging all of you, just come. Just come. Dr. Prater, you owe me another date in kindergarten, so you guys need to come and watch. Ellen's on her way in about a month. She's coming to see us, so come see it in action. Just walk in the door anytime. Except at 2:45 when it's dismissal, like the last time you came. Anyway, come see. It's very exciting. And thank you for listening to us.
Hi, my name is Mary Iron, and I'm here to speak about the parents. And we're trying to do parent workshops so that our parents feel informed about this 90-10 shift. And so that's very exciting. We've done a couple this year, and we got that idea at a visitation that we did at another immersion school last spring. And so, you know, the goal is to make them feel informed and address any concerns, although there aren't as many concerns as we, you know, thought there were going to be. So what I try to do today is collect some quotes from some parents for you, and these are the things that they have to say. I have a parent that said, "I feel as though I have won the lotto. This is such a special program. I was concerned about reading, but now I am not. He is right where I was hoping he would be. My kindergartner is teaching me Spanish. I thought he was going to be confused, but the way you are teaching makes it really easy and seamless." And I think they're referring here to all the singing and chanting and, you know, all the repetition that we do with them. "My only concern is going from 90-10 this year to 80-20 next year. My daughter in kinder is speaking more Spanish than my daughter in second grade. I wish my daughter in second grade could have gone through the 90-10 program. The program is fabulous. I am seeing great results in my child. I love that they are learning our home language of Spanish and English. I like that my child is no longer switching classes. This is very big, especially for our Spanish-speaking families. Before, they used to switch for Spanish language arts, but now they stay with the same group all day. And last, I am proud to be a parent or a part of this new program at Pacheco." So those are just some of the things that our parents have to say. They are so excited to be part of this, as you know, we are as the kinder team here. We're very excited with this kinder class and just seeing them next year and for the next 6 years to come. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Monica Garcia, and I'm the preschool teacher at Pacheco. I just wanted to share with you a couple of things. One of the units that was created under NGSS for kindergarten was weather. And so we looked at it in a different way, and I was able to collaborate with this amazing team. And we tweaked it with intention, and we worked it in a very unique way. And after doing the process with kinder, I came back and introduced a lot of these ideas and concepts in the preschool level. So we have been able to front load a lot of ideas early on for those kindergarten students. I'm not teaching kindergarten in my preschool class. I'm just giving them an exposure to early concepts, vocabulary, so that they can have a great year next year once they get into their kindergarten class. I've always been teaching thematically in preschool. It's something that I've always done for many years. But I've had the opportunity to work with kindergarten this year in an amazing way. And like many years ago, there was a presentation about being good tired. This has been literally the first year that I've felt the best good tired in my life professionally, because we have built an amazing program, and it's been so much fun. It's been a lot of work, but it's been amazing because the results we're seeing. And we've seen more growth in language and experiences. And many of the families are super excited about what's to come and the growth that they've seen in their children. I've supported this kinder team with planning days all last summer throughout the year. And I want to thank Mr. Mayfield for allowing me to do that, to support them. And I've also gone on, now I'm supporting the first grade team. So we are seeing lots of great accomplishments at Pacheco 90-10. So thank you very much for this opportunity.
Lot of work. Fabulous team of personnel. The quality of a school is measured by the quality of their teachers, and Pacheco is a great school because of people like them. So any questions?
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
I was on your website today because and I was noticing the article that you've posted on your website about the bilingual brain. Yes. And this is the Pacheco website.
Right.
And what I noted is that the brain that is exposed to a second language at 6 months, or 6 years, and then at the very latest at 16, you know, it's going to be a brain that's going to have at least 5 more years of mental acuity, as opposed to brains that are approaching 60. Which is when, you know, around the same time. But I have to confess at the moment that I wanted to see how this would work, to be introduced to an educational situation in which you spoke none of the language. I wanted to experience that. So I went to Monica's pre-kindergarten class every Monday during the fall semester and had that experience from day one of walking in with the English-speaking children and being in a group among a group of people who are all speaking Spanish and you have no idea what's going on around you. And I'm as monolingual as they come. And so the children and I could, you know, sort of share a look that would say, do you know what they're going to do with us? No, no. And they were, they looked, you know, somewhat bewildered and sometimes a little sad and sometimes a little confused. And then I would come back the next week and they'd had a whole week ahead of, you know, of working forward. And they were just skyrocketing past me. And then by Christmas, you know, they were just taking off. And it was just fantastic to see how, first of all, Monica, obviously a fantastic teacher, great support, help in the classroom, tons of parent involvement, all the parents staying afterwards to help as well. But it was a great experience from the ground floor for me to see how language is acquired, or not in my case, but there's more hope for them. So thank you for doing this. This has been an amazing opportunity for our students. And also I just want to say that it gives me tremendous empathy for the children then who are Spanish speakers who are in our English-speaking only classes, because I understand how they can be misunderstood as not having the potential, not having the ability, that it's not actually going on inside of them when they're trying very hard. And if we can just give them a chance to catch up and support them with language opportunities, we're doing them a tremendous favor and giving them tremendous opportunities. So thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Mr. Question. Oh, thought I saw it. Okay. If there's no further comment, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
It's wonderful. Proposed revisions to Board Policy 1312.3, Uniform Complaint Procedures. Mr. Robinette.
I always get to follow the really good stuff. I tell ya. Love that Pacheco program. Okay. We have a couple of board policies in front of you tonight. This is the first reading, so we certainly can bring these back if necessary. These were prepared by the personnel office, who really deals with most of our complaint issues. And so Mrs. Newland's here in case we need any assistance from her. But let me just kind of preface it by saying there's lots of types of complaints that can come into a district or surround a district or be brought up. And they really, at least in my mind, fall into four broad categories. There's that category that we call uniform complaints, which is what this first board policy is about. And uniform complaints are really about issues that are compliance with law. And so a uniform complaint is when someone is alleging that the school district is not following a law. And that law might be ed code. It might be government code. It might be penal code. But it really is some sort of a legal standing, typically ed code in an educational setting. But it could have to do with discrimination, harassment. And so uniform complaints is a big, broad policy. And so we're bringing some changes to the uniform complaint policy to kind of simplify it. We keep most of our more complex aspects of it in our administrative regulations, the timelines and the procedures we'll follow. Another type of complaint we have are a little subset of the uniform complaints called Williams complaints. And this came with a settlement of a lawsuit about 12 years ago now, maybe a little less than that had to do with kind of unfairness within things that could happen in a school, specifically textbooks, like if there's inadequate textbooks at a certain school or if facilities are not clean or repaired. Those are Williams settlements. And so that's a subset of the uniform complaint procedures. We also have complaints that have to do with employees, and that'll be a second policy we'll look at, where employees, if they are feeling that there's something unfair happening that might not have to do with specific ed code, that they have a way to you know, even if they need to skip a step by talking to their immediate administrator, that there's a process they can go through. And that's the second policy we'll look at, some changes to just the complaint policies within the personnel aspects. And then we have something that we would just call sort of general complaints against district employees or district programs. And this is what something that we've actually negotiated with our San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, for example, when it comes to certificated employees. And this is really where people are not alleging breaking the law, they just might not like the grade their student was given. And how do you go about that process? Or there's some sort of a need to be able to complain about a district employee. And that's a whole other set of procedures that is really outside uniform complaints unless it has to do with this. So I'm generalizing a lot, but we take in a lot of complaints and we try to process them all in actually quite similar ways. This one that we're bringing in front of you, Board Policy 1312.3, has to do with uniform complaints. So again, I'm not going to go through this whole policy. I hope that you've had a chance to read it, and if you haven't and you want to revisit it and bring it back, we can certainly do that. Basically, uniform complaints right now are falling into 9 categories, and so Ms. Newland actually enumerated them. There's been a lot of changes in Ed Code, especially in the last 6 months, that all say this is a uniform complaint. This is an issue of uniform complaint. So if you go down that list, Mrs. Holmes, a little bit, you'll see some things that we've talked about recently, like student fees. School is free. And so if somebody wanted to complain about the fact that somebody is being required to pay for something within school, well, that would be a uniform complaint. Just at the last meeting about a month ago, we discussed the new Assembly Bill 1012, which says that you cannot have classes in our high schools without educational content. And it also said in the law, if you do that, that's someone's right to file a uniform complaint. So we've put that into the law. We have new laws about making sure that we have lactation accommodations for employees within our workplace. That's a uniform complaint if we were to violate that. And so we've, to the best of our knowledge at this point, we've enumerated those things within the board policy that would fall within a uniform complaint. And then if you go down a little bit further, Mrs. Holmes, you'll see we didn't make changes with how this is posted or advisory committees or any of those kinds of things. But we also wanted to put in the policy, and this is according to CSBA's latest, where complaints should really go that are beyond our purview, like a child abuse issue. That would not be something we would say, okay, we'll investigate that and handle that ourselves. That is obviously something that belongs to CPS, and our employees all know that. Complaints that have to do with specific discrimination in hiring practices, that would not be something we'd say, yeah, we'll look into it for you. That's something that needs to go to the Department of Fair Employment and Housing. And so we've made sure those things are listed of where things should go that belong there. So that's my nutshell explanation. Questions or comments?
Whoa. Mr. Buckman. Oh, is there anyone in the public who would like to comment on this board policy?
Or does anyone in the public want to complain?
We're ready.
Okay, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. This was an amazing year for
new laws.
Just an amazing. In both of these, I think it makes references to federal and state being the primary focus for using uniform complaint. Rick, is there anything in our board policies that would direct people to use uniform complaint? And if so, should we add board policies in that statement?
Oh, to complain on the basis of a board policy.
Yeah.
That we're not following a board policy. We could. That would fall within it. That is you're a lawmaking body in that regard. So that would, if we wanted to do that, we could. It's not in the CSBA language, but there's no reason we couldn't do it. Board policies typically are made on the basis of Ed Code, but they might be diversion. So
yeah, and I'm just
to the board.
I'm just thinking maybe something in the future comes up, and then we don't have to go back and change this. And I'm wondering it's within one of these, but it refers to the. And I can give you the page if you want, but the board acknowledges and respects student and employee's rights to privacy. If I'm not mistaken, both of these are the employee uniform complaint procedures?
No, this one is part of our overall. The second one you'll be looking at is specific to employees.
Okay, so, and I think in that second one, well, so I'll wait till that. So, appreciate, because this was hard work, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're a little ahead of the game. We didn't get all the language from CSBA and all those different line items, mm-hmm. but I think we've got them, at least at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments? So at this time, Mr. Buckland, were you suggesting, were you proposing a revision, further revision to the policy?
Yeah, I'd like to propose that we do put the word board policies in because some of the discrimination stuff and some of the other additions to this may actually either show up in board policy or eventually be in board policy. And I think probably adding that it is something we should do.
Yeah, if you look at the very top, my suggestion, if we were to do that, I think is Mrs. Holmes, if you can go to page A, the right. top of it. I think what Mr. Buckman's referring to is probably in that first paragraph or that first section. So, primarily responsible for complying with applicable state, federal laws and regulations and board policies governing educational programs is perhaps what's being suggested.
Okay, is the board in agreement with that change?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then is it the pleasure of the board that we would have this? Would anyone like to move approval? With the additional language, or do you want to see this revised board policy come back at the next meeting?
So, if I can, then I'd make a motion that we add within the first line of the second paragraph, the governing board recognizes that the district is primarily responsible for complying with the applicable state, federal, and board regulations governing educational programs and
board policies
and that with that addition that we go ahead and approve the policy as presented.
Okay. Can I get a second for that?
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 7-0.
Thank you very much. We'll make that change. The second one is what I was referring to for employees. So this is in our personnel section, the 4000s in board policy. That'd be peers in classified, certificated, management, and it's really just the ability to allow employees or applicants for employment to have an avenue for complaint. And this would be, so we pulled out language that had to do with uniform complaints, thinking we've already covered that someplace else in board policy, and this would be just acknowledging privacy, confidential investigation, the fact that sometimes it's good to have a third party involved in investigating and resolving complaints. So a lot of strikeout in our current language and just simplifying this to keep it away from the uniform complaint, because obviously an employee has every right to file a uniform complaint if there's an allegation of not following state or federal laws or board policy. I think that pretty much nails that one. Is there any questions or concerns or anything I can answer about that one?
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to revisions to this board policy? Mr. Nett.
I'm Jim Nett. I teach at Laguna Middle School. I'm just looking this over, so I haven't prepared anything. My only concern, and it may be addressed by Mr. Robinette when he gets back up here, is that in striking out what was a procedure, it isn't replaced with a procedure. And in looking at things, I don't see a timeline where if an employee had a complaint, when it would be dealt with or who would deal with it, who would investigate it. And maybe that's covered somewhere else. Again, I'm just looking this over, but I'm noticing the omission is so great and it's not replaced with anything. So I don't see this as an employee as spelling out what the procedure is. And I would suggest that maybe there be something in place of what is struck out, even if it's simplified. Thank you.
Mr. Robinette, would you like to respond?
Yeah, we try to keep procedures and processes in our administrative regulations. It's actually our go-to when something happens, is we go to an AR that lines out steps, timelines, all those kinds of things. I believe we have an AR already developed for this one, and if we do not, we certainly should or would have one. I don't know. We do have one with all the timelines and the calendars and everything. So if it's helpful, both for the public and for the board, we could bring this back, even though the board doesn't approve ARs. If it'd be helpful for you to know what the processes are for this kind of thing, we could certainly bring that back.
Can you reference that AR?
Yeah, it would be the same number. It'd be AR 43, whatever that number is. It's an AR that attaches to that thing. But we can certainly share those procedures.
Okay, Mr. Questenberry, then Mr. Buckman.
Well, yeah, along the line that Mr. Nett mentioned, I was looking at this last paragraph that was struck, and I noticed that there was mentioned in that a process including mediation. So was that your understanding, that we really didn't need that because we already are going to continue that procedure or that process?
Yeah, I'd have to look at what our AR actually says about mediation. I don't know that offhand. It's a good question.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. On the first page, I don't know how to count paragraphs because I'm going to go with the strikeouts, okay? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In the eighth paragraph, I had a question actually about the word student being in here, but now that I look at this, Rick, if the word says the board acknowledges and respects student and employee rights to privacy, we took out the word discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I look at it, if
that would be
if
fall
I
under
might
a uniform complaint.
Yeah, if I might suggest on this paragraph, if we took out the sentence, the board acknowledges and respects student and employee rights to privacy, I believe it's covered when it says complaints shall be investigated in a manner that protects the confidentiality of the parties and the facts. And then we eliminate the students from an employee policy.
Mm-hmm.
So just a thought. Otherwise, I was going to ask to strike out the word student because I don't think it belongs in an employee policy. I think that's great. I still think that striking that sentence it may be redundant at this point. I'm not worried about it. So let's leave it the way it is. It's fine. Thanks for answering my question, Rick.
Sure.
If there are no other comments, I believe that the administrative regulations flesh out the board policy. And I have no problem with this policy as it's proposed.
I'd like to see the administrative regulations just to make sure that the board policy is is comprehensive enough. So if they could bring it back, I would favor bringing it back.
Okay. Mr. Unger.
I would also favor bringing it back. I'd like to see the ARs understanding that it's not the board's purview to change the ARs.
Yeah. And I'm just concurring with Mr. Millar and Mr. Unger.
Okay, well then.
So why don't I publish those in Friday notes for you so you have them, but then we'll bring it back at the March board meeting attached so everyone sees them.
Mr. Unger.
And I just, for purposes of the record, administrative regulations are available for anyone to see, is that correct?
Yes.
And where are they available, Rick?
Where are they available, Mrs. Holmes?
They're available within our board docs site, but they're also available on the website, which links back to board docs. So if you just look for policies under the board page, I can show you that here. So if you go to the school board, policies are right here. And this link brings you to the board doc site where policies are listed. This is where they're archived. So they're organized in their 1,000 series. We're looking at a couple of 4,000s right here tonight. So if I were to go down and find, what are we looking at here? 4144. Mm-hmm. This one
this is
being
updated.
Changed right now. So the BP is listed there, and I don't see an AR, but I'm not positive that's 100% accurate. We'll check on that and see. But when there is a board policy and an AR, they both appear here, and they're so they're available to everyone.
So I'm sorry, Mrs. Holmes, did you say that the policy and the AR are available?
Yes.
On the site?
Yeah. I don't see one here under 4144.
So I updated both of them, the board policy and the AR, but I did not give the AR to Ms. Holmes, so that's why it wouldn't be up on there.
So more the reason to have you see it.
Okay, so then your marching orders are to return at the next meeting with this revised board policy and and the administrative regulations that that apply to it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Item 8.04. Let's see. This is Mrs. Newland. Adopt the board's 2016-2017 bargaining interests for Service Employees International Union.
So at the last meeting, we had a public hearing on this, and the public didn't have anything to say. So at this point in time, it would be you adopting your interests before we start negotiating with SEIU. They still have not developed their interests and are still serving their members, so that will come forward to you prior to negotiations. But these are the board interests. So we're recommending that you take action on these.
Is there anyone in the public that cares to speak to this item? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Sheffer.
If there is no other discussion, I would move adoption of the board's 2016-17 bargaining interests for SEIU.
Second.
So we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. Item 8.05, Measure D and Other Construction, Authorization of the Issuance of an RFQ for Engineering Services. That would be Mr. Pinkerton.
Oh, yes.
There you are.
Here I am. So as we talked a little bit about earlier, our issues with the sewer and issues and just infrastructure in general with San Luis Obispo High School, in talking with Mr. Holcomb, with Mr. Palazzo, our facility staff, as we've gone around the campus, as Mr. Buckman kind of pointed out, we did try to start in the kind of the peripheral work that way. One of the key things we found, particularly at San Luis Obispo High School, is that they're actually the city sewer, runs from the Johnson Street area right through the middle of kind of the practice field next to the tennis courts, right to the old or to the newer gym. We call it the new gym, but it's really not that new. And then cuts across through the track and field actually back out to the Johnson Street. And so that just happens to be right where we were going to put the pool and building facility. And so that necessitated a whole conversation. We've actually met with the city of San Luis Obispo to talk about moving that sewer. There's, you know, a lot of different options in terms of that, and the city, I think, is willing to work with us, but there are some potential huge costs associated with that, whether that be moving it outside the property completely or moving the sewer line itself maybe closer to the tennis courts and then out. But all of that, we realized as we went through and found out a little bit more, the sewer actually feeds from kind of the main part of campus down. And so by taking the sewer outside the school district, we might be taking away our own sewer line. So just all of those questions, the potential of putting air conditioning on that campus and the electrical output that would take for that, and just investigating electric, water, sewer, infrastructure. I think in talking to Mr. Holcomb and myself, this was just something that we needed to have a better plan initially. Yes, we have groups that are designing buildings, doing things right now in classrooms. We have our design build project for the main part of campus. But to get all of that to kind of come together, we really felt like we need to have an infrastructure, get an engineering firm in, kind of give us some guidance, help us in particular work with the city of San Luis Obispo. And if you've seen in the RFQ, or you haven't seen the RFQ, but as we put it out, we are definitely looking for somebody who has worked with the city, who has been tied into our local community for that, and definitely to help us through the political channels, I think, as we progress. And so this will be an RFQ that gets put out. Builders Exchange, I would assume, and out to a lot of different groups. And so hopefully we can find somebody who has good qualifications who can help us kind of put this plan together.
Okay. Mr. Holcomb, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, there's a strategic component to this, too, in terms of purchasing. What we're doing is collecting all of that like same work and pulling it out, a carve-out out of every project and packaging it by itself. It really doesn't require an architect to oversee it. We don't need to go to DSA with this work. So fundamentally, we'll get a bigger bang for our buck by purchasing it as a comprehensive, holistic system as opposed to a bunch of little tiny tidbits, which oftentimes, as it happens, you tear up one thing to fix another. So each of the buildings will only have their services in the architect's package taken to 5 feet outside the building, and then this infrastructure will connect electrical, sewer, water, data by in and of and by itself. Plus, you can design it in a manner to provide for future capability and to remind every one of the architects, whoever they may be, to please remember the future, please remember the future. We just put it in the specs ourselves. So Mr. Palazzo's work will be made much easier when he has to bring a new technology in. We don't know what it is yet, but the ductwork and the conduits and all of that will be in place. So future cost becomes reduced also.
But in light of what happened last week, too, I'll also add that anything we can do right now to get that infrastructure fixed and to ensure that our students, because they're going to be going to school throughout this construction, to make their life better and keep that campus functioning, we should try to accomplish.
There's also the possibility in rerouting the city line. There's two thoughts on it. Take it out to the street or take it internal to the campus and use it as our trunk line. In other words, connecting it instead of us putting in a big infrastructure and effectively running parallel to that city sewer. So that's a possibility. We're not sure how that's going to work out. It has to do with invert, depth, heights, flow, and that sort of thing.
So tonight we're asking the board to approve our ability to go out for an RFQ and to find an engineer to help us and get this accomplished.
Okay, let me go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Questenberry.
So is this going to look – I don't really understand it completely.
Uh-huh.
Other than the sewer, is it going to look at electrical, water, gas –
all utilities.
All the utilities.
Yes.
And do we have a pretty good handle on where most of that is, but we're just looking to engineer it better?
Well, I mean, we know where the lines are. We know those types of things, but I mean, when we decide to potentially move that sewer line, which is what we're talking about doing, there's major engineering in terms of the flow the slope and how that all ties into the system. Okay. And so we can, you know, we like to sit around at the table and talk about and draw lines and everything, but until we have an engineer come in and say, hey, you can do that or you can do this, there's definitely some... We need that professional support to do that, and I think it's important now because we have found some different lines that even aren't – they're not even on our maps. The old gym kind of area there actually has a line that nobody knew. It's not on any papers, but Rick Stimson was able to actually find it by using some color dye and going out to the sewer system in the middle of the lawn and looking down and seeing the dye and realizing, hey, this is where it's flowing to. So getting that help is going to be essential.
Didn't we have some abandoned gas or oil lines through the campus?
So there is.
Is that something separate?
Okay. Completely separate from this aspect. But yeah, that's definitely something. There were potentially two old oil lines that ran through. Don't know if the lines are still there or not. But there's potential for oil cleanup in that same area as well, and we're working with a couple of potential firms of who owned that oil line at the time and trying to mitigate that.
Okay, anyone else? Then I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make approval of item 8.05, request to authorize issuance of an RFP for engineering services.
I'll second.
So we have a motion by Mr. Unger, a second by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Item 8.06, approval to pay board member salary for permissible absence.
Yes, I'm requesting on behalf of Mrs. Roger, who was unable to attend the February 12th board study session due to a family emergency. She had to take care of her mother in the Bay Area. So I'm seeking your approval to excuse that absence.
I would make a motion to approve the board member's salary for permissible absence, item 8.06.
And I'll second that, please.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer, a second by Mr. Buckman. I'll be abstaining. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So that passes 6 ayes and 1 abstention. And thank you very much. We're moving on to the action consent agenda, so please let me know if there's anything you'd like to have pulled. Item 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approval of secondary instructional schedules for 2016-17. 9.03, disposition of surplus property. 9.04, acceptance of donations. 9.05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.06, approval of purchase orders. And 9.07, approval of field or study trip, Morro Bay High School Choir to New York.
Please pull.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion then for approval of items 9.01 through 9.06.
I move for approval of 9.01 through 9.06.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Questenberry. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. And item 9.07 was pulled by both Mr. Buckman and, I believe, Mr. Unger. Did you pull it, Mark?
Yeah, we both did. I'm just
okay.
Deferring to Chris if he...
Okay, Mr. Unger, would you like to speak to that item?
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate the Morro Bay High Choir for their Carnegie Hall trip. And just
I accompanied the Morro Bay High, San Luis High choirs to Carnegie Hall in 2005, and I would say that it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. So, again, congratulations to them.
How do you get to Carnegie?
Practice, practice, practice.
Okay. Would you like to make a motion?
I'd like to speak first, please. Thanks, Meryl. So, and yes, I agree. It's absolutely an amazing accomplishment. But as I read this and looked at it, and I see this as actually one of the STEAM, part of the STEAM program that we're trying to implement. I actually believe that this is now moving beyond just the arts, but moving into academics. And I can think of geography and doing the math and the history that these kids are going to take part in. And so I just want to call attention to the arts that are in the STEAM and that this is supporting that. So with that, I'd like to make a motion to approve 9.07.
Okay, I'll second. So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, second by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 7-0. The advance agenda. Does anyone have anything they'd like to discuss for advance agenda? Seeing nothing. Reports by board members. Mr. Millar.
I wanted to comment on the study session for assessments that was held whatever date, Friday. I know there was some concerns about it, but I just want to say that the information that was presented about the current state of assessments that we use in the district at all grade levels and that basic information was really helpful to me. I'm glad we had the study session. I look forward to hearing other inputs from other folks, but I feel like now I'm prepared to hear those inputs and have a frame of reference to kind of understand them. I appreciate the concerns that were expressed by some members of the public, including Jim and Rose, but I'm glad we went forward with it, and I look forward to the next step, and I thought staff did an excellent presentation.
Mr. Unger.
I just want to say that, I concur with Mr. Millar. There was just so much that I didn't know or understand about the assessments, and I'm sure there's a lot that I continue to need to understand. And to have a basic understanding of what the different assessments were and what some of the timelines were was really helpful for me, and I think it will help inform any conversations that I have on that topic as well. But I did want to say that Friday afternoon I had an opportunity to visit Mr. Crabb's class. And the students were engaged in their makerspace. They were doing Mindstorm robots, their Lego robots. And they had created these robots on wheels that moved around. The students had to program the robots themselves, and they were doing that with their laptops. And they were directing the robots where to move. There were a couple of parent volunteers in the class. It was pretty neat to see them. And what the parents in the class had done was they had created an octagon, like they actually compared it to sumo wrestling. I was going to say ultimate fighting. And the idea was that these programmed robots were placed on either side of the octagon. They were given a signal, and then the robot that pushed the other robot out of the octagon was the winner. It was amazing. Every kid was engaged. The parents were all engaged. The teacher was engaged and so excited. It's just great to see, and I want to thank Mr. Crabb and the folks that teach for letting me come out and check it out.
Okay, Mrs. Sheffick.
I, too, wanted to thank staff for preparing the study session on assessments and understand the need to bring this forward, at least pieces of it, in a distilled manner, because so many of the staff are already more aware than we were at the time. But having that information and the opportunity to study it more closely, I think, was important for the board as a whole, and I appreciate Jim and Rose's emails. I would add that, you know, the opportunity for us to become thoroughly informed, and more so going forward. I've spoken with a few teachers since our study session and feel that I'm better equipped now I've always listened, but to listen more intelligently with my own knowledge base heightened, and we'll look forward to continuing the conversation. And I would just point out that because it is important for the board because we set the policy. I know there was, you know, sometimes it sounds like, what do we know about anything? But, you know, we do in terms of what's going on the ground, but we do, and we need to have a deeper understanding so that we can contribute to the district in the policies we pursue and set up for the district to operate by. So I think that was important and informative, increased our knowledge, and will make us better at what we do in terms of serving our students, the community at large, and being able to be responsive to staff and teachers and everyone, all our kids, to help with what our job is, which is to get them through school. So thank you for that.
Well, let's just go right on down the line. This is Dr. Eisengrath Rogers, followed by Mr. Questenberry, followed by Mr. Buckman.
I'm actually going to comment on attending the High Tech High from San Diego presentation at Morro Bay High School. And it was an all-day affair, and I was not there all day, but I was there for the kickoff of it, and I could already see the excitement in the room and the sort of engagement of the teachers sort of going through the same motions that we now put our students through in each of our classrooms at every level, where they would be given some information, then asked to check that with their neighbor, and then and discuss it back and forth. And you could just see the excitement building for the whole STEAM program, and it was just a great launching pad, even from what I saw, of where we can go, and then how the sky's the limit with that program. That was fantastic. And I was also able to participate, or listen anyway, at the LCAP at PAC Beach High School, and it was it's amazing to see how thoughtful the students are about what it is they like and the areas of improvement they could see, and how much they seem to respect and appreciate that they were being asked. And they had very thoughtful comments to make on that. So I look forward to other high school students and elementary and middle school students sharing their thoughts with us as well.
I did not attend Morro Bay High and High Tech High. I have two grandchildren that attend High Tech High in San Diego, and have had the opportunity to see various presentations they've made over the years. I must admit, I was a skeptic when they started way back in elementary at that program. I'm a little bit skeptical of all charter schools, but over the years, they've convinced me that it's a very worthwhile program. They build in a lot of opportunities for the students to learn by doing. It's a great program. But I'm here to boast a little bit about Monarch Grove Elementary students. They came to the Los Osos Rotary Club looking for money to support a butterfly. We'll call it enhancement garden. They're looking to plant milkweed, the right kind of milkweed. I did not know that there was other kinds, in order to perhaps reverse in a small way the decline of monarch butterflies. And this presentation was done by five young women from third grade, and it was just wonderful. It was wonderful. They did a fantastic job. Well, it's still to be determined, but, you know, there was, I have to tell you, there was a very generous Rotarian from Paso who gave them $100. And then they got a few bucks from our members, and then our board will look at it 2 days from now, Thursday night, see if we can give them a little bit more money. But they've already bought 72 seeds, and they've planted 72 seeds for perhaps 72 plants, so...
Doing this at Monarch Grove?
They're doing this at Monarch Grove. They already have, you know, their garden there, and they already have plants that butterflies enjoy. for sustenance, I guess, what have you. But this is something for to really give them, I guess, a bigger nutritional boost. And it's what they like to eat and so forth. So then also I had a chance to on Saturday to go to the Morro Bay Music Boosters dinner at the South Bay Community Center. And, of course, it was Mr. Bellier was there in his sartorial splendor and, you know, directing the fabulous Morro Bay Jazz Band. And then the choir students put on a lot of individuals, trios, duos, performances while we all enjoyed a Moroccan meal. And it was quite special for all of us. The students performed wonderfully, and I just don't know what we're going to do when Colleen Wall retires, but I'm sure we're going to find someone who can attempt to fill her shoes. I did go Thursday night to watch Morro Bay Soccer's final game against San Ynez, and I'd like to report that they won 3-2 in overtime. So, yay, Morro Bay.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Hi, just two items. Last Friday, I attended a four-hour meeting of the Tri-County Education Coalition Executive Board where they're going redoing the bylaws, and the what we added was a lot of things to improve community involvement, so it's not just going to be educators, but it'll be parents and businesses, and so I'm pretty excited about that because for, I'm guessing, close to 28 years, Tri-County Ed has been in existence, and this will be a fairly big change for it. The second thing, and I'm drawing a blank on the name, and I apologize, I was at a store the other day, and a gentleman was in front of me, and he was buying, like, really, like, hair bands and just some really neat stuff, and he said something about he needed it for class. He's a physics teacher at San Luis High School. He promised me pictures, so I should be able to get his name, but he was also buying it out of pocket, and I was impressed with him and his looking for household products, everything else that he could use to teach physics at San Luis High.
Can you provide a name, Mr. Robinette?
That's what
that is who it was. Thank you. Nice guy.
Okay, well, I was out of town all last week, so I have no report. And if there's no additional business, we will stand adjourned. Our next regularly scheduled meeting is the 1st of March, 6 p.m. at this location, J2. Thank you.